KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in the Richmond District, San Francisco.
Ingleside, San Francisco.
I'm from West Portal.
East Oakland.
Coming up, crews in Santa Rosa race against the clock and the weather forecast to make sure the mess left behind by fire doesn't end up in our water.
One really good rain, all that stuff is going to be leaking into the soil.
Then we hear about some of the health risks that come with post-fire cleanup.
Those homes had siding and insulation and metal pipes, all of which have dangerous materials in their debris.
And iconic Bay Area musician Sheila E. talks about her new album and making a difference through her music.
It only takes a person to change an environment standing for something, and it's a domino effect.
That's all coming up on Cross Currents. Stay with us. When flames tore through thousands of homes and businesses in Santa Rosa in October, they burned garage doors, paint cans, hot water heaters, and car batteries. The sheer amount of hazardous mess left behind by the fire is unprecedented and dangerous to the Russian River watershed. As it starts to rain, experts say any amount of precipitation will pick up toxic fire debris and transport it down storm drains. So scientists, environmentalists, and community members are working around the clock to prevent toxic runoff. KALW's environment reporter Angela Johnston takes us there.
One of Katya Robinson's favorite things about her Coffee Park home was the walkway up to her front door.
We had this great front little wavy fence that was really welcoming, and a beautiful like tomato garden right here to the left, and now it's it kind of looks like it's a big pile of trash.
Her home, like almost all of the others in her neighborhood, was completely leveled in the fire. All that's left are some cast iron pans, mangled hot water heaters, and pools of melted metal. The blackened skeleton of her car is one of hundreds, oddly sitting in the driveways of the flattened subdivision.
So watch out, there's nails sticking up everywhere.
But Coffee Park is alive. Robinson's neighbors cut down branches from a tree. Backhoes grab giant chunks of crumbled homes and dump them into white trucks. Everyone, she says, is now in cleanup mode.
We have some hazardous waste. I run two soccer leagues, so we had a lot of field lighting paint here, like 48 cases. So we try to group those over there so they can just take those away really fast.
Take them away before the rain comes. She points to the gutter.
It's dangerous. It's going to go into our water system. One really good rain, all that stuff, all this stuff is in plastic is going to be leaking into the soil.
More than a dozen groups are working as fast as possible to keep that from happening.
Well, right now we're crossing Old Redwood Highway on Marquess Springs Road, and we're going into the Marquess Springs Estate.
Jeremiah Puget, who works for the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, points out EPA workers in white hazmat suits and pink masks, picking up propane tanks and putting them into a pickup truck.
Because one of the first things it has to do is the EPA has to first come in and remove any potentially hazardous. So even before we're doing our assessments, we need to make sure that there's no hazardous materials around.
When the EPA is done, they stake a sign with a big green check mark out front. It's now safe for homeowners and crews like Puget's, CAL FIRE, FEMA, and the California Office of Emergency Services to dive in. Crews place tubes of hay called wattles in between the debris and streams or the storm drain. Almost all these wattles you see in Santa Rosa are made by a local hero called Doug the Wattle Guy.
It's amazing what just a little wattle can do.
Wattles are everywhere, in front of almost every car, every driveway, every storm drain, and surrounding every charred pile of metally mess. Fire is a normal part of the ecology, and the Water Board is trained to deal with its aftermath. But this, he says, is brand new territory.
But it's a totally different scene when we have burnt homes that contain asbestos or other potentially carcinogens that we don't want mobilized into the environment that we recreate in, that we swim in, that we get our water supplies from. We have never encountered anything quite like this. The scope of this is astounding. It's on a scale that we haven't seen before.
Since the fire, the Sonoma County Water Agency has been testing the public water supply more often, and so far, everything has been fine. But there's a bigger risk for the creatures that live in the rivers and the streams. They have a much lower threshold for toxins and metals than we do. That's where volunteer groups have noticed gaps and jumped in to help.
But let's get everybody in vests. They're under the bucket here. Let's do that. That's something we can get everybody in vests.
Is there a large around? I guess I can take this jacket.
Awesome. So let's get started. We got a few things that we can all just start doing.
Chris Brocade works for Clean River Alliance, a nonprofit that usually cleans up trash in the rivers and streams around Sonoma County.
Been getting supplies in. We have all those wattles behind you that need to be staged over here.
On a Saturday morning in November, he directs a handful of volunteers as they fill sandbags and lay wattles across a small creek downstream from Coffee Park.
Oh my God, chaos, organized chaos.
Half of the wattles are stuffed with a special type of mushroom fungus that will help filter out toxins.
They've never been put out for fire runoff. So, I mean, this is potentially groundbreaking.
Brocade saw the results firsthand when he came out here a few days after the first rain. He noticed a wattle holding back debris and oily water.
And you could totally tell on the other side of the wattle how clear the water was running. So it felt good. It felt good. It felt like, you know, like the stuff that we did the day before really, you know, made a difference.
The Russian River watershed is a habitat for crawfish, salmon, and river otters.
We're protecting even the littlest things, and that's part of the food chain. It's like the littlest things have the effects on the biggest things.
So that's why constant water quality testing and monitoring is also necessary. That's Don McInhill's job. I meet him the day after a big storm near the fungi-filled wattles.
Better rinse the bottles well. Have to make sure they have nothing but sample water quality. Okay.
McInhill works with the river stewardship group Russian River Keeper. Since the fire, he's been out here almost every other day taking samples.
Getting affected by the air temp too much.
Once he draws the water into a plastic jar, he quickly tests for basic physical measurements like pH and temperature and conductivity. The higher the number, the more metals in the water.
Yo! Not as bad as that other one, but we're looking like 803. So we're definitely up. So there's probably metals. There's probably a lot of other stuff that's conducting electricity.
This resiliency is popping up in Santa Rosa in all forms. When Katya Robinson and I walk out of the charred remains of her home in Coffee Park, she spots a tiny piece of green grass sprouting out of the ashy dirt.
Oh, look it. New growth.
Some green.
Oh, look it, some green's coming back. Kind of nice to see, like, the birds are coming back. They're, like, playing in our burnt car, you know, in and out of there.
Once her insurance comes through, Robinson wants to rebuild on her property as soon as possible. But she hopes she can do it differently this time.
All this stuff is going to sit in a landfill. And it's absolutely insane how much waste people produce. Because where are you going to put all of it? It's super depressing because if you just look at it and you think about it, like how much waste people produce, and you look at all this destruction and garbage and things that we don't necessarily need.
She thinks the city should find a way to incentivize homeowners and planners to rebuild neighborhoods like Coffee Park with greener materials and more efficient water systems.
Hopefully, like, all this brings a new change to Sonoma County and, you know, what we do to actually rebuild and consider a little bit better what we put in our houses.
In Coffee Park, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
If you've got an environmental story you'd like to see reported, email Angela at environment@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. As people like Katya Robinson work to clean up their properties in Sonoma and Napa, not only are the local waterways and ecosystems at risk, people are too. The wildfires left about 250 square miles of burnt land, and not just scorched earth, but also materials that can be hazardous to people's health. And they have months of work to get everything cleaned up and rebuilt. Joining me is reporter Nina Gensler-Debs, who has reported on the North Bay fires. So, Nina, have cleanup crews made a lot of headway with burnt properties there?
Well, at least with the first official stage of cleanup, yes. Mm-hmm. The EPA has surveyed almost 99% of the buildings affected by the fires.
Okay, so you were up in Sonoma County in October reporting on the fires.
I sure was.
What do you mean by first official stage? Like, how is the cleanup process working?
So the process has been divided into two parts, phase one and phase two. Phase one is required for all residential properties. You heard a little bit about it in Angela's story just now. Mm-hmm. The EPA goes to every property affected by the fire to inspect it and remove any household hazardous waste that could pose a threat to humans, animals, or the environment. So that's stuff like batteries, paints, and building materials. Mm-hmm. Those have to be specially handled and disposed of by trained professionals. And that's the part that's almost done.
Okay, so what about phase two?
So that's where all the less toxic debris is removed. As a property owner, you have two options, or I should say had two options, actually. You can get the government to help you clean up or hire a private contractor. Okay. The deadline to sign up for government assistance was November 13th. If you signed up for that, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will be coming in and removing fire-related debris, things like trees and foundations, ash, until the site is clean and safe for building.
Okay, what if you didn't request government assistance?
Option two is hiring someone privately to do that cleanup.
Okay, and are there rules or regulations for how that works?
Yes, and it's really complicated. You certainly can't do that work yourself unless you have the right certification or licenses. There are a lot of forms, it's really bureaucratic, because there are a lot of ways for people to get hurt or sick in a cleanup and rebuilding process like this.
Like what?
So to see how we've seen this problem before, look at 9/11. Obviously a very different kind of devastating tragedy, but similar in that there was a lot of debris, a lot of smoke and wreckage that responders were sorting through and cleaning up. In the years since then, over 100 firefighters and responders have died from illnesses related to working at Ground Zero, and almost 1,500 have cancers related to that work. Mm. So those were huge office buildings, and with these fires, we're generally talking about homes. But those homes had siding and insulation and metal pipes, all of which have dangerous materials in their debris.
Right.
One researcher at UC Berkeley has started a study on almost 200 Bay Area firefighters to see what kind of toxic chemicals they could have been exposed to while fighting the North Bay fires. And that debris is something homeowners and cleanup workers can be exposed to as well.
Okay. Are there other substances or chemicals that can make people sick that you haven't already talked about?
A lot of this stuff is probably intuitive. Like, for example, any burned electronic waste, your computer, your sound system, what have you, that can be hazardous. Ash from forest fires already contains small amounts of cancer-causing chemicals, and that can irritate the skin and lungs. But ash from burned houses can have traces of heavy metals, like lead or arsenic, which is definitely not good to breathe in. Stirring up any of that ash or dust on the ground can make it airborne.
So who really needs to be paying attention to all this?
Well, any homeowners on their properties, and of course, anyone who's doing cleanup work. I actually talked to Amelia Carbajal. She works at the Grayton Day Labor Center up in Sonoma County. And ever since the fire started, she's been really concerned about people, day laborers or other contractors, being hired to do this work without proper protection, like masks and gloves and clothing. She told me about one woman hired by a private contractor who's got rashes after working on a cleanup in the Fountain Grove area. And she thinks that we'll see a lot more cases like this in the future. The Grayton Day Labor Center is actually partnering with something called the Labor Occupational Health Program at UC Berkeley to create work-safe trainings specifically for this fire cleanup in the hopes of preventing more problems.
Okay, so how can people find out more?
If you want more information, you can go to SonomaCountyRecovers.org, which has all sorts of helpful information on every step of the process.
Okay, thanks, Nina.
Thanks, Nina.
You can read more North Bay fire coverage at our website, kalw.org, and click Cross Currents. ¶¶ This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Oakland's very own Sheila E. is revered by many as one of the greatest drummers of all time. She grew up in a musical family, the daughter of legendary Bay Area Latin jazz percussionist Pete Escovedo, and later she made a name for herself as a central member of her close friend Prince's band. Her latest album is called Iconic, A Message for America. It's a highly personal collection of political covers, including songs she listened to growing up in the 60s and 70s. Guest stars include musicians like Ringo Starr and Bootsy Collins, but also political icons like Angela Davis and Dolores Huerta. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, the woman known as the Queen of Percussion talks about making the album and about the childhood memories that inspired it.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing.
I always brag about how the Bay Area is the best place to be born for so many reasons. Being born and raised in the Bay Area has influenced me as an artist, as a musician, as a person.
But for everyone, love.
The music that was being played on radio back then, radio stations all over the Bay, was very eclectic. So all genres of music from, you know, Stevie Wonder to Grateful Dead, Santana to Creedence Clearwater. It just, you know, went back and forth, and you could hear all kinds of music. And that's how I grew up, listening to all kinds of music. So my dad bringing in Latin jazz as a foundation of his music, it's just been amazing. Like, the people we grew up with, watching my dad bring different artists and musicians into the house. There were jam sessions all the time. Sometimes the band would be in the middle of the living room rehearsing. My brothers and I would catch the bus, you know, wherever we would hear about, oh, Sly and the Family Stone's going to rehearse here, or Larry Graham's going to rehearse here, or Santana, or whomever, the Pointer Sisters, or we would just go and we'd sit outside some of the venues or their rehearsal places and sit outside and sit there and listen to music right on the curve, you know, on the sidewalk. We loved music. And then there were friends of ours that were also musicians, so there would be jam sessions at, like, down in Telegraph and Berkeley a lot, over by Berkeley College, and anywhere anyone could get together, we would just get together and play. A year and a half ago, I put a folder together that I entitled it Politically Correct. And I wanted to do a political record a year and a half ago. I wasn't able to do it right then. And I thought, if I put a dance record out, which would be cool, that would buy me some time to write that Politically Correct album. Then Prince passed away. And after that, I shut down for a minute. And I went back in the studio and started writing, just writing, not for anything specific. Got some of the band members and we just started recording some music. While we were doing that, as I was mourning Prince, the election started happening. And then I just felt like I need to do something else and stand and talk about things that I want to talk about.
Back it. Moonshots, for receipt. You take it.
I went back and started listening and choosing songs that I grew up listening to in the 60s and the 70s, especially here in the Bay Area. And I was choosing songs that lyrically were relevant to the times we're in right now. And lyrically it said something, or lyrically it meant something now. It is called Iconic Message for America. And the message is definitely bringing people together through music. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these. I started with the national anthem in a funky way, and Declaration of Independence as well. And I thought through those words, and definitely what the national anthem means. And when I every time I hear that song, I get emotional.
Starts with us. We are the ones that have to take the action to make peaceful, nonviolent change. Nobody is going to do it for us. We are the only ones that can make the change. It starts with us.
Dolores Huerta has been a family friend for a very long time. My dad plays a lot of music for her and her family for different events that they do, and even personal, you know, birthday parties. And so they're kind of family to us. I called her and left a message. What could I do to have her involved on this record? And would I have her write something, or would I write something and have her recite it? And I sat down with Dolores and talked about things and how music was important to them as they were out in the fields back in the day, and what that meant musically. How it was a movement back then, so how did music get you through what we're going through now?
Are you hearing what he's saying? Are you feeling what you're praying?
Are you hearing? Growing up with my parents, my mom and dad always said that we can always give back to the community. And we were born and raised that way. As early as I can remember, doing that our entire lives, I think that's our part of our community and part of our walk and part of our giving back, because we are from the community. And we didn't know a lot about politics, but we had love and we had family. We had God, music, and that got us through. And we've always wanted to continue to share that movement of community and planting that seed in someone else's life.
Are you standing for everything you talk about? They say transcendental meditation speaks of inner preservation. Transcendental meditation gives you peace.
That was the queen of percussion, Sheila E., talking about her new album, Iconic, A Message for America. The piece was produced by Beau Walsh. Sheila E. will be celebrating her 60th birthday this Thursday with a concert at the Paramount Theater in Oakland. All the details are at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Atemu Atan, Amber Miles, Lisa Morehouse, Christine Nguyen, Stephen Short, Andrew Stelzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Gabe Graben, James Rollins, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Thank you. Our local music today is by True Life Trio. This group is devoted to the creative possibilities of cross-fertilizing folk music from diverse cultures. True Life Trio will be blending harmonies on Saturday at the Octopus Literary Salon in Oakland. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.